advisory committee like for me to hold together these thoughts as I've heard them, circulate it out to the committee, and give a period of time to receive some feedback so that I could then put forth a revised, updated draft based on what I have received? Is that something the committee would desire for me to do?
This is Al. Answer is yes. I also have a question. At least the answer for me is yes. I don't pretend to speak for the committee, but I have a question with regard to whether any staff have reached out to their colleagues in New York to see how they handle these matters, New York being, A, the fourth most populous state in the country, but more importantly, being one of the states that practices strict and well-thought-out protocols. So I imagine they would have something to contribute to this discussion.
This is Brian. I have not reached out to my counterparts as part of this dialogue. I felt I wanted to start this conversation with our advisory committee. But as part of this process, there's certainly the option for me to reach out to the New York agency. As well as, you know, Tara is on the call, I'm certain that Helen Keller must have some protocols in place that she could provide, you know, feedback on once I were to send out this draft, assuming that's what the committee wishes for me to do.
Well, as this is Al again, as a member of the committee, then I would like to put forth that request that you do reach out to your colleagues who have experience with these matters.
Certainly that can be something that I would do. I'm very comfortable doing that, so thank you.
Excellent.
Brian, if you could please hold, we're going to switch interpreters. And also
okay.
To indicate, Brenda had her hand up a while back on Zoom.
Okay.
One second.
Tara Brown-Oakley has her hand up.
Okay.
All right, the interpreter is ready. Brian?
Go ahead. I thought somebody had their hand up. I apologize. So, Tara, you have your hand up if you
I'm
wish.
I'm sorry, Brian. Brian, this is the interpreter. We were just waiting for you to officially call on Brenda. But, yes, she has had her hand raised for quite a while.
Oh, I apologize. Okay, Brenda, yes, please.
Hello, everyone. My name is Brenda, and I'm not officially on a committee, but I do have a question that I would like to ask Brian. And maybe Sandy could also answer this question. So what we've seen during COVID is that there's been a lot of danger that we're all encountering and that we're familiar with. There's risks involved. And we can see that with the governor's decree, we're seeing some more openings. The numbers are looking good. It seems like things are getting better. And what we're seeing with deafblind individuals and hearing blind individuals, that some of these people aren't comfortable working with an SFP, which is understandable. The nice thing about Braille, and maybe this is an area that we could talk about, is that we've seen some individuals want to learn Braille and some don't. And so if we're going to be investing money on Braille instruction, on interpreters, on technologies that are adaptive and suited to our consumers' needs, maybe something we can think about is that, again, whether it's deafblind or hearing blind individuals, is that some of these people, because they don't feel comfortable working with an SSP, they instead have a family member that they trust and that they feel comfortable working with, maybe even a close friend. So when it comes to working with an SSP for these individuals, it's important to wear a mask, have the SSP individuals be 6 feet away, but we could bring in family members, we could bring in friends. These are the people that are blind individuals feel comfortable having close to them less than 6 feet away. And maybe those are the individuals we can work with, and maybe we can find a way to finance that kind of activity for our consumers. That way they can feel more comfortable with all these interactions they're having, whether it's with their SSP, with interpreters. They can have a trusted family member or trusted friend to provide them that support, that emotional support, that physical support. And there's some way that we could find some reimbursement for their labor, essentially. Maybe that's something we can discuss. Thank you.
This is Ryan. Thank you, Tara. I know you have your hand up. I just want to respond to Brenda's comment with a question of Sue Patterson. I could be wrong, but I understood that the SSPs are contracted individuals of CAN. So if I am correct in that assumption, would there be anything that would preclude a family member or close friend of one of your served clients to become the contracted SSP for that client?
This is Sue here, if I could get the spotlight. Okay, so this is Sue speaking. We do hire close friends at times to work as an SSP. However, family members, we do not. What I've learned from the previous director is that we do not allow family members to become SSPs for their family member, their deafblind family member. And the reason we have decided to do that, to make that decision, is because we consider it a conflict of interest. We notice that a lot of our deafblind individuals want to feel a sense and to experience independence from their family members. And so if we hire a family member as an SSP, that tends to become a conflict of interest. And so because that was decided by the previous director, I have maintained that decision. However, I'm open to discussion. If we feel like we want to allow family members to become SSPs, I'm open to that discussion. And I will say that if the deafblind individual is adamant in wanting a family member to help them, then I feel like we can let them do that. The difference is that we wouldn't compensate that family member for their work or their labor. That's something we don't have a decision on, and you can feel free to spotlight the interpreter now. Thank you.
This is Brian. Thank you. Tara, did you want to make a comment?
And sorry, this is Lisa here. I'd like to speak after Tara.
Brian, can you hear me? This is Tara.
Yes. Thank you.
Wonderful. Sure. So speaking for the Helen Keller National Center, I'll just share what we've been working on. So very similar. The protocols are to follow each state. So it is still underneath the guidelines of states and if they're allowing to have in-person visits or not. But with that in mind, we've pretty much come up with the idea of when that's available, that there is a mutual consensus between the consumer and the provider, such as an FSP and a deafblind community member, that they both agree to meet under the idea that both parties have self-certified that they have not had any COVID symptoms recently, have not been in contact with someone who has COVID recently, and we also have been all given a non-contact thermometer, a smart thermometer. So we have a questionnaire that we would send out ahead of time for people to fill out whether or not they have these symptoms, have been in touch with someone who's with COVID. And if they pass that, then we both take our temperature before meeting. And if anything were to happen, we can still cancel. But if that all goes well and everyone's in consensus, then it is possible to meet with masks. We can provide the masks like those disposable kind, and or we can have gloves, the latex-free kind, but typically no gloves, just a lot of hand washing, because sometimes the sign language gets to be more than just your physical hands. Sometimes it gets on your arms and different things. So, and it is within a less than 6 foot space because of tactile sign language, the haptics, and what that entails. So the protocols we've established are to be in less than 6 foot, being able to touch without gloves while still wearing the mask. But again, there's a mutual consensus, and there's a questionnaire, and there's temperature taking. And all of that still has to be underneath the state agency. So, like me, as someone with HNC, I can't necessarily go into someone's home unless the VR is able to do the same. So I have to follow the state. But that's kind of where we are with HNC developing those protocols. And I can ask if I'm able to share some of those questionnaires, more specifically if Brian and the committee is interested.
This is Brian. Thank you.
Real quick, this is Tara speaking. I just did want to add, I think, commenting from Lisa Flaherty's comment on one of our prior meetings, is potentially having training for providers or SSPs on COVID. As an HKNC staff, we were given a COVID overview, and we had to pass a test at a certain rate in order to move on to being able to meet with people in person. So perhaps we could talk about a training that would be for SSPs or any other provider, such as a Braille instructor, to know some of the signs, symptoms, and protocols involved with COVID. Thank you.
This is Al. I apologize.
I'd also like to say something.
Sorry. Just a moment, please. I have to leave, and I didn't want to interrupt, but I do have to go prepare for another meeting. So if it's going to jeopardize the quorum, I apologize for that. And if there's something we need to vote on, we should do it before I leave. If we have a quorum, then it's moot.
This is Brian. I believe we have a quorum.
Okay. So anyway, I want to thank everybody, and I apologize again, but I have to go.
This is Lisa. I'd like to say something.
Okay.
So this is Lisa Flaherty speaking here. I just wanted to say, Flaherty speaking here, I just want to say something that came to mind. When I'm thinking of deafblind individuals that we work with that are out there, and when I think about some who have intellectual challenges or some who are high functioning, and then I also think about SSPs, just all the different dynamics that come into place in our work. Maybe something that Sandy said about screening tests in regards to fever or other symptoms that manifest themselves physically, maybe we've forgotten something. Maybe we should talk about some of the deafblind consumers that we have and how they can test themselves. Right? If they can't see what the thermometer tells them temperature-wise, how do they know they're ready to leave the house? How do they know that they're qualified or sort of self-certified, so to speak, to meet with their SSP or to go to their appointments or something like that? And if an SSP doesn't have training to know how to identify fever or anything like that, or to know what the qualifications are in order to feel that they can leave their house safely, I agree. We need some kind of policy across the board for SSP or other providers to know that what needs to be tested. And while we mostly have that in place, it's worthwhile to ensure that all of them have that. But then even more so, how do our deafblind consumers know that they have the right temperature, just to begin, to leave the house? How do we teach them to test themselves? And that's all. Thank you.
This is
not like the interpreter.
This is Sandy. In this great age of technology, we don't have a thermometer that talks. I mean, or maybe a Braille thing. Somebody can invent it.
So this is Tara, hand up.
Go ahead.
This is Tara Ogilvy with HKNC speaking, and that's a good point that Lisa makes. With myself, we have an eye health thermometer we purchased that we bring with us, so the provider would bring it.
and it's no contact, so you place it over the person's forehead in the middle, and then it vibrates when the reading is complete. So that's what we're doing. There is a device out there that has a thermometer attached to an app, and then the person can access that with low vision or perhaps to a braille display. But I will say that it is quite cumbersome and possibly expensive to purchase the thermometer and app. If there was a second or third party who could help with the thermometer, that would be fine. Also, just feeling the feelings of a fever, that could be something that maybe consumers, we can talk about what it feels like to have a fever. If you're not feeling feverish, if you're not feeling that you're sick or having these symptoms, that could be maybe a personal gauge as opposed to having the physical temperature taken by a device. So that's just my input, and I know we're going over on our time a little bit, so I'll just leave it at that. Thank you.
And may we pause for an interpreter switch, please?
Okay.
You may go ahead, Brian. Thank you.
Thank you. Okay, so this is Brian. What I'd like to do is bring this agenda item to a point where we can move on with the other agenda items. So I guess I will ask it in this way. I've heard a tremendous amount of valuable feedback and ideas and how some entities are proceeding and how I might gain some additional information. And certainly anything I come up with as a draft is only a draft. We need to be very, very aware of the governor's restrictions, and that anything that we even as a committee say, yeah, we think this looks good, I would most certainly want to have it reviewed at higher levels to be sure that everything we are proposing as an advisory committee is something that stays in line with the governor's requirements. But all of those things brought together, I will ask it this way. Is there anybody on the call or on the Zoom who is opposed to me putting together a draft where I will try to capture the ideas as I have heard them to put out for the committee to review and respond to, so that we're not waiting till the October meeting to then have this conversation again? Is there anyone who feels I should not do that? Okay, having not heard any opposition to the idea, within the next 2 weeks, you will all receive an email with a draft for your comment, your reaction, your recommendations, so that I can then pull all that together and then revise it and then put it back out there as a more refined draft, so that we can try to come up with a model that safely allows for some degree of community-based interaction. Thank you. I think this was a good conversation, and I thank you all for your active participation.
Brian, if I may raise my hand. This is Sandy.
Okay.
I just wanted you to know that at South Ferry, we have been making PPE kits, you know, personal protection equipment kits, for people in the community. So I'm not sure who the resources are to call, but DDS is willing to provide these kits. And I believe once every 2 weeks, our crew goes to Norwich and some other place to hand them out. And I guess you have to call and set it up. I know Jackson Louise Pierre has been one of the people to contact at DDS. If there's anybody that is in need of personal protective equipment, they pack sanitizer, they pack gloves, and they pack masks. It might be a good resource. You know, they're handed out to people in the community, private providers.
Thank you.
You're welcome.
Brian? Anna?
Yes.
It's
yes.
Barbara. I just had a comment. When people were saying that it's hard to have the SSP, or like with Hannah, her husband, she has to ask permission for her husband to go with her. I have not had to take Peter to any appointments, but I believe that Oak Hill has taken him to a couple, and obviously he has no language, so someone must be going with him. But I have had the occasion to take my daughter to several appointments that were in person, and she is not deafblind, but has disabilities, and there's never has been a problem with me accompanying her. So I'm surprised that some places are still resistant to having someone accompany anyone with a disability. And I know the hospitals have loosened that up because people have been able to accompany disabled people to the hospital. So I just throw that out there as I'm surprised that that's still an issue, I guess.
Chair.
Go ahead, Hannah.
I want to mention that when I do go for an appointment, I went to several. They assume my husband and I live together, so we certainly don't have it. But they did still check my temperature and his temperature, and I said, look, you know, I need to have him come along. So there was no resistance. They just accepted him as necessary to come with me and to guide me, like through the hallways or whatever, because I couldn't by myself.
Mm-hmm.
Okay, Hannah, the next item, I think Andrew is on the phone, the legislative and budget update.
Okay.
This is Andrew Norton. The legislature, well, the state house, one half of the legislature, convened last Thursday and Friday, and they passed four pieces of legislation. One was to say that telehealth would still be covered under these special circumstances by insurance providers. They also did a bill to keep down the costs of medicine for diabetics. Those weren't the most famous bills. The two more famous bills were ones on police accountability, to change a lot of rules about how police interact with the citizenry, and also to offer more review and, as they say, accountability for how police handle certain situations, especially any that might involve restraint or violence. And then there was a bill regarding absentee voting. As you may know, in Connecticut, you're allowed to absentee vote, but only so long as you can say that you will be out of town or sick, that you're sick and can't get out of the house. And a lot of people don't want to leave the house under COVID, even though they aren't sick. They're worried about getting sick. So the legislature wanted to expand the use of the absentee ballots for COVID. You don't have to be sick. You can be worried about being sick and going out to the polls. So absentee balloting, if this bill becomes law, would be more broadly allowed in November. And they've already set that up for the August 11th presidential primary and other primaries in the state. This would extend it to November. The Senate has to meet, and they will, actually, maybe they're meeting now, today and tomorrow, to depending on how long they take. The House took about 22 hours straight to work on their legislation. There was some issue, and there is some issue in the community of advocates for those who are blind about absentee ballots. If you go to the polling place now, there is a special machine to help people who are blind vote by phone, a phone set up at the polling place. But absentee ballots don't have that system. So there is still some concern out there that if you're blind and you don't want to go to the polls because you don't want to get COVID, just like everyone else, how will you access, how will you have access to an absentee ballot, a written ballot? And that's, you know, a dispute that's going on. It's been handled in some states, in other states it hasn't. But our agency and advocates for people who are blind have been in contact with the Secretary of the State's office, but the proposed law doesn't address that issue specifically. I raise that because I know that's an issue in the blind community. That's still being worked on, talked about, but it hasn't been dealt with in this bill. The legislature may come back into session, well, in September, I think, to deal with some other issues like school spending. Of course, schools have extraordinary needs if they do open up, everything from, you know, distancing and running more school buses and putting up plastic dividers in classrooms, etc. But at this point, they won't be in session probably for not until another couple months, but I don't know exactly when. And the budget, well, you know, we're looking at a big deficit at the end of this year and next year and the following years, just because Connecticut's spending and revenues don't match up. But now with COVID, with extra expenditures and a lot of tax money not coming in, people don't pay income taxes who are out of work, et cetera, et cetera. We're going to have more red ink, more deficits, but exactly what they'll do to tackle those questions, raise taxes, cutting spending, hope for federal payments to help state government, all of those may be in play, but I don't know of any plans yet that are specific, and nor have any been made public that are very specific. Again, those four bills were passed by the House late last week, and they'll be taken up by the Senate today and tomorrow, I understand. And I guess they'll probably pass and probably be signed by the governor as they are. And I guess that's my report, Madam Chairwoman.
Mm-hmm.
And I'm open to any questions.
I do have a couple of suggestions I thought of. In the voting time, with everything now being on like a takeout and we drive through, why not, like when we do vote, we have to go inside our town hall, why not the drive through? First window, you pick up your folder with your voting, second window, you drop it off in the machine. You know, that could be an idea that could be brought to the legislature, a drive-through voting. And also, if the person can use the FSC to vote for them, I don't know how individuals who are not able to go through that process, to have someone can read it to them and check it out and send it through. But a drive-through, I thought that would be a fairly safe procedure. Just an idea.
Well, this is Andrew Norton. I don't know how town clerks and registrars of voters are yet planning to execute Election Day, you know, in November, on November 3rd. Maybe some towns are considering allowing some people to avoid entering the building by doing just what you said. I don't know. This bill sort of got into the whole absentee ballot issue. It didn't dive too deeply into the issue of how you vote at the polls, but that's certainly something that could be considered. And again, if you do get an absentee ballot at home, you may recruit the assistance of a family member or anyone, a neighbor, a friend, to fill out the ballot, someone you trust?
No, wait. You're not supposed to. You're supposed to have an independent ability to fill out your own ballot. That's guaranteed because everyone else gets that. It's guaranteed inside of the ADA. So if the state doesn't provide people the ability to vote, even at home by themselves, whether they supply large print or they supply Braille or they supply some kind of technology for non-Braillers. Excuse me, this is Allen Ginsberg. This is required by the ADA.
I'm sorry, I didn't mean to take a stand on whether or not the absentee ballot is sufficient. I did raise the issue that there are a lot of groups saying it isn't accessible and therefore it's problematic. And so anyone should feel free to bring an action under ADA or Connecticut law, putting forward a claim that they have not been legally served. So you should certainly do that. If there isn't any court decision or a court case or successful resolution, I would bring your lawsuit, but I would still figure out a way to vote, because if the state doesn't act to accommodate your request by November 3rd, you may still want to figure out a way to vote, which you consider to be inadequate. But you may still want to figure out a way to get your vote in there and still proceed with a lawsuit.
I completely agree, Andrew, and I'm sorry that my tone was a little tough. I think that our representatives are failing the disabled community by not addressing the pandemic, the ability to vote, and the need for a private ballot as prescribed by law. So I have already brought it up. I'm sure that along with other people, whether it's the NFB and others within the state, this is going on. But if you have an opportunity to speak to your local rep, you need to tell them that you are entitled to vote by yourself. That's the way the law is written. And they need to supply an accessible ballot, whether you are a large print user, a Braille user, or a non-Braille user.
I agree with Alan that you should definitely make, Andrew Norton speaking, you should definitely make your opinions known to the elected leaders. Absolutely. That is a notwithstanding any lawsuit action you might take, you should make your opinion known. That's a very good suggestion.
Okay, Chairman Tyler, only because it's 12:21, I'm going to recommend that we push forward with concluding the other report so that we can adjourn at 12:30. That's what, and we have the interpreters until.
Okay, so we go ahead with report from BESB Director Brian.
Thank you. This is Brian. I just some very quick updates. Edward Owens, who was our vending facility supervisor for 34 years, retired in July 1st. And I'm pleased to report that Tyrell Sampson, who worked within the Business Enterprises program for, I believe, 13 years, has been promoted to the supervisor's position. Also, in Children's Services, we've had three retirements: Peg Palmer, Jill Baker, and on September 1st, Andrea Garuski will be retiring, and we have hired Jessica Simpson to fill a vacancy that we've had in Children's Services from an earlier retirement that happened in the middle of the school year. I've already given quite a number of updates throughout the meeting time in terms of the various programs The only additional one I'll add is that our Children's Services Program is developing a virtual in-service training series. The fall in-services that have been traditionally provided in an in-person venue are now becoming virtual trainings, and we're looking forward to offering those to school district staff in the fall. And that is my report.
All right. Well, thank you, Brian. I just want to say this is certainly a new normal, certainly challenging for all of us, but we have discussed many great, great ideas, and I'm sure moving forward, we will accommodate all the challenges that we have. I'd like to make a motion to, are there any other questions?
Hi, Hannah, this is Sandy Mile.
All right, Sandy.
I just found out that if you, if there's an agency that would need this personal protective equipment, they can go online, the DDS website, to fill out forms. If it's a family, they can come to, there's handouts, and I guess you would check the website to find out where those are. I know one of them is in Norwich. And you just show up and give the individual's name and the amount of staff that need PPE kits. So just for your information.
Okay. If, would it be possible to email everyone that information so we have it on online access?
I will access that and I'll email it to Brian.
Okay, that'll be great. Okay, may I have a motion to conclude the meeting? I'm losing my voice, sorry.
I motion to conclude. This is Sandy.
All right, second.
Lisa and Jesse have their hand up.
All right, terrific. Well, thank you all for coming. Be safe and well, and I appreciate the meeting.
Thank bye you bye. All. Have a safe day. Bye bye now.
Thanks.
Bye bye.
Bye.
Bye everyone.
Bye.
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 Be
thank
safe.
You.
Bye. Be safe.
Tomorrow, you'll have to put it back.
You're really, really cold.
You'll get it.